Hi, and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm Atik.
And I'm Nyla.
We're both professional registered homeopaths, and between us have over 25 years of professional practice in this field of healing.
The Homeopathy Health Show is the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcasts around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing and healthcare, which is suitable for all ages, young and old.
Every week, we invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy.
Visit www.ukhealthradio.com to listen now. To find out more about us, you can visit us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk. And whilst you are there, do subscribe to our newsletter.
Be inspired.
And join the conversation.
So let's begin today's show here on the UK Health Radio Network, the world's number one talk health radio.
Real Feel Good Radio.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Homeopathy Health Show, the award-winning Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm Atik.
And I'm Nyla. Welcome, everyone.
We do hope you are in a splendid mood indeed. And I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, at the time of recording this episode with our very, very eminent guest indeed, the UK is going through a heat wave. Believe it or not, the rain has ceased. But my God, is it hot, and it's absolutely boiling. So if halfway through this episode we stop talking, you know we've fainted. I know there's nothing you can do about it, because emergency services, etc., they won't know either. But hey, it's a beautiful time of the year as well during the summer months. It's just such a pleasant time, isn't it? And everybody starts to smile. And that's the power of the sun. And that's the power of not a heat wave, but just summer itself.
Yeah, beautifully said. Yes, it is hot. But today we are truly delighted to welcome Professor Jean Duckworth, one of the most respected educators, researchers, and leaders in modern homeopathy. Professor Duckworth has dedicated more than three decades to advancing homeopathic education, professional standards, and research, helping to shape the future of the profession, both in the United Kingdom and internationally.
Wow. She's a qualified homeopath since the 1990s, and she has combined clinical practice with an outstanding academic career, of course, because she's Professor Jean Duckworth. And that's our first professor on this on the Homeopathy Health Show, so that's why we're just so happy, happy, happy. Many listeners will know her from her long association with the University of Central Lancashire, where she served as course leader for both the BSc Homeopathic Medicine and MSc Homeopathy programs, mentoring and inspiring generations of homeopaths who, see, the heat's getting to me, generations of homeopaths who now practice around the world.
Her academic achievements are remarkable, holding qualifications in law, education, bioethics, and homeopathy. Jean completed her PhD exploring the lived experiences of midwife homeopaths. Amazing, isn't it? I just get goosebumps when it comes to midwifery. Reflecting her lifelong interest in the human dimensions of healing, professional practice, and patient care. Throughout her career, she has been a passionate advocate for ethics, research, integrated healthcare, and educational excellence. She has served in numerous leadership roles within the profession, contributed extensively to research and scholarly publications, supervised doctoral students, and played a key role in strengthening the academic foundations of homeopathy.
And we haven't even ended there. We've just started this introduction, so get ready. So today, she continues this important work as Professor of Homeopathy at Remedy Academy, where her wisdom and her experience and commitment to nurturing the next generation of practitioners continues to make a profound impact. Jean's career reminds us that homeopathy is not only about remedies and prescriptions, but it's also about education, ethics, inquiry, and the ongoing pursuit of excellence in patient care. This is so, so important. In fact, Nyla, it represents homeopathy in practice and you know, the objectives that we have as well of sharing and imparting that knowledge and nurturing, right?
Oh, yeah, I mean, amazingly. But before that, I think her work raises some important questions for the profession, like, can homeopathy communicate with conventional healthcare without losing its identity? How do we research a system based upon individual experience? What makes homeopathic education rigorous, ethical, and transformative? And what might be the next chapter for homeopathy? But before all these questions, it's a genuine privilege to welcome you to our today's episode. And I would like all of you to invite, I would invite all of you to welcome Jean Duckworth to the Homeopathy Health Show.
Welcome. We have ended the introduction.
Pratik and Neela, thank you so much. You know, I've always avoided being on podcasts and, you know, and putting my head above the parapet of, you know, of being on, you know, radio or anything else. And I think partly that's because I have spent so long within an academic environment, a conventional academic environment, you know, and I remember my very first board, you know, academic board, we'd been teaching the AM, the BSE homeopathy for a year. And I went into this academic meeting along with lots and lots of other academics. And I sat down and a comment that was made to me, oh, the witches are here.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So that was my introduction to academia.
That's a nice introduction, isn't it? Okay. Kind of, yeah.
But at least they knew what they did.
Yes. But, you know, so I think 25 years at UCLan teaching homeopathy and integrated health, you know, we have to say thank you to the universities for, you know, experimenting with us being there. And, you know, I think depending on the course that you were on, you had different experiences with the universities. You know, some universities made partnerships with other colleges, and they were very quick to drop those colleges once as time went on. We were lucky at UCLan because we had people, even though, you know, we had some issues with some people, we had a real support system there. That welcomed us. And, you know, it was only, I suppose, towards the latter years of being there that homeopathy, actually alongside philosophy, alongside arts in universities, alongside fine arts, everything was going. And universities had become what I would call the Ken Robinson style of education. Have you come across Sir Ken Robinson?
Mm-hmm.
No. He was a researcher up at one of the universities, a professor, and he was talking about the function of education. And basically what he was saying is we put people into a system, we educate them the way that we want them educated, with the really the information that we want, and then we turn them out to work in the workforce for 40, 50 years. And it came to me probably just pre-COVID that that is what universities had become. They had moved away from institutions of thinking to institutions of preparation for particular styles of workforce. So if you weren't doing a job that had a graduate income or graduate career, then the universities were just slicing off the courses. And really, because of that, because of my own values and what a homeopath should be, what a homeopath could do, and because I think that all knowledge is a value, all knowledge is, well, all knowledge is thinking. You know, Heidegger would say that it's important to think. And for me, that is where a university was. And when it ceased to be, I had to think about whether or not my place fit there. My place was there. And so we came up to COVID, and then COVID hit. And I think lots of people had epiphanies during the COVID period on, you know, whether their values were aligned with what they were doing, whether or not, you know, they were happy with things that were going on. And very quickly afterwards, I started thinking, well, luckily, I'm of an age where I could take a pension from the university that would provide me with a basic income, and I could reevaluate where I wanted to be And initially, where I wanted to be was back at the coalface of homeopathy. So I thought, oh, I will be, and you know, I hadn't thought about education then. I was thinking about whether or not I should go back into practice full time. And I was setting it all up, and then out of the blue, I got this phone call and text, and it was from an ex-student of mine, and he, Peter Berriman, and he'd been a student on the MSc that I'd done. And he'd been involved with a woman called Melissa Kupsch, who's an amazing woman who had created Remedy, and they'd been running some short courses, and they came along and they said they would really like to run a slightly longer course. And they said, would I come along and talk about how to put a course together? And I went along to meet them. And at first I was just going to write it for them. I wasn't going to get involved. And they said, well, come aboard.
Wonderful.
So I thought, why not? And so together we wrote this course. And this course was designed to really, you know, one of the things that we looked at, well, what were the skills of being a homeopath? And you've got to remember that the lineage of UCLan is not UCLan. The lineage of UCLan was the Sheffield School of Homeopathy, because we had Ian Townsend that was teaching there, and Jill and other people. Before that, he had been part of the Darlington Collective. We were also had a thread through LCCH, because at one time we were part of LCCH. So before that, you know, we had the schools up in the Northeast. So we have this huge lineage of courses that go really right back to the beginning of education in the UK, homeopathy education. And it was drawing on all of that knowledge to bring it into the new Remedy Academy. But we were aware of a number of things. One was, how do we best prepare homeopaths? Not people who are academics, but homeopaths. You know, what skills do they need to go out into practice and practice? You know, because one of the problems is you get so many people that fall off. You know, of my course, I trained at the Northwest College, and we probably had 5 or 6 people that practiced out of my year. And we started with 40 odd. So people drop off. And why do they drop off? Often because the transition into practice is too difficult, either financially, either the responsibility that they take, or other things. So that was, so we wanted to put in what I would call an apprenticeship program. And that was very much Peter's requirement. So we put in this apprenticeship, and then we thought, you know what, AI is coming. And I was already aware of AI being at the university. And people, you know, well, you all know for yourselves, since you first started your homeopathy journey, you know, the plethora of information that is available to us is unbelievable. You know, when I started training, it was still Kent's repertory. Yeah, Complete was coming in, Murphy's came in during my practice. And so we train, one of the things is, how do we train people now to take their place in homeopathy going forward? Even though we brought through the past as a thread, it's very much about the future. So what do homeopaths need to know? Well, they need to know how to practice. So they still do, you know, the 30 case visits that all courses do. But within those 30 cases, those are the things that we assess. So we don't assess essays. I don't ask them to do a comparison of Nat Muir and Staphysagria, because it's done within their cases. And their cases they are quite structured. You know, we will assess them on their case taking, their knowledge of what the vital force is doing, you know, whether they can repertorize, whether they can decide what, you know, what strategy they're doing. All of those things, how can they reflect on their cases? So all of that is within their 30 cases, and they do that for every single case visit. And they do multiple choice. That's really their formative work.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are coming now to the end of that course. And in a way, that course, was a leap of faith into what homeopaths need. So to begin with, we didn't go down the route of complying with registered body requirements. We did what we thought was needed. And we got 570 students sign up.
That's a really, really good number.
That's a really good number. Like, we, from this number, we can actually see people do want to study homeopathy and they do want to become homeopaths. So what I'm understanding from what you offer is, I don't know, where did we go there? Because you have so much knowledge, we actually forgot to ask you, how did you come to homeopathy?
How did I come to homeopathy? Well, I think, one, growing up in South Africa, you know, there was always a slightly greater appreciation of homeopathy in South Africa. You know, I was brought up there in the 70s, well, in the 60s and 70s. So it was already being talked about. And then I came to it partially because I always wanted to become a psychologist.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
But at school at that time, psychology was always deemed to be a bit, you know, why don't you become, you know, a psychiatrist? Mm-hmm. So they were trying to push you down. Oh, well, you know, if you want to do things with the mind, become a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. I did not want to become a doctor. So strangely enough, I met my husband at school.
Amazing.
So I got married, you know, I had a child. Aww. And then I thought, well, a couple of children. And then I thought, well, what do I do with my life? So I went and became a lawyer. Well, an academic lawyer. Mm. Because it was when I was becoming a lawyer, and I had to, as part of your training, you had to go to court. And one of those, we were at the High Court, and unfortunately, we had an experience that really rocked me to the core, because it was a child wardship case, and it was about a child who'd been injured. And very quickly, I was reminded that law is simply a body of man-made rules that we use in order to govern our society. And, you know, my first law lecturer said, you know, very first lesson, he said to me, if you think law is about justice, you might as well leave the room now. And it took me back to that. Law can achieve justice, but that's not its aim. You know, it aims to keep order and create a set of rules for us. And because it rocked me to my core, I thought, I can't continue to become a lawyer. And so I thought, what else can I do? Then I was offered a job teaching law. Everything's happened serendipitously. Okay. And I got this job teaching law, but it didn't, you know how you get this feeling that it's not your life's purpose, that it is, you know, you can be competent at it, but it doesn't feed your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I decided that I needed to do something else. And so I was going, one of the things I looked at was osteopathy. You know, because I'm quite a mineral type of person. So osteopathy, okay. And then I thought, well, actually, I don't want, the courses down there were largely southern based. I thought, no, what can I do? And then I remembered homeopathy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went along to the college, and it was a guy called Ernest Roberts who was running the Northwest at the time. So I went along to see him, and before I knew it, I'd come out with a load of books from the interview. And I started reading them. And as I read them, things started, you know, falling into place. You know, he'd give me a copy of the Organon. He'd given me, you know, I think I'd actually got my Kent's repertory then, and that one or two Kent's lectures. And I know they were the old books, but I loved them. And one of the criticisms that's often made, one of the things that's often said to me, I like books before 1965.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's my cutoff. It's not true, but yeah, as you can see on the bookshelf. But one of the things was, I absolutely adored homeopathy from then on. And no matter what I have ever done in life, it's always drawn me back. It's been the single thing that has never bored me, that has always lit my fire, if you like, in terms of just what it can do and the transformation that is possible from good homeopathic treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I hadn't been in homeopathy. You know, I'd only been a homeopath for, you know, taking my own cases for about 5 years.
Mm.
And I think LCCH, London College of Classical Homeopath, were looking at coming to UCLAM because they'd been trying to get a course up there. And suddenly I was invited to a pub for a meeting along the A6 in Lancashire. Mm. And it was people from the Sheffield College there, it was all the local homeopaths. And then before we knew it, myself and a colleague, Kate Chatfield, a friend of mine, we were suddenly told, all right, you're in the university, come for an interview, you're the course leader for the BSc Homeopathy.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Well, there you go. That doesn't happen every day, does it? Hey?
You know,
that's nice.
Can I say, I have never, ever in all my life had a formal interview.
We know that. We're so fortunate, actually. Going off on a tangent here, but as far as homeopathy is concerned, it's quite nice, isn't it, not to be interviewed. The majority of it is done through the work that is done, and maybe even just talking about cases and discussing homeopathy and the relationships form. It's so different. It's so refreshing.
Mm.
You know.
You know, your story reminded me of something that I am also very passionate about. What is the soul purpose? This is not feeding my soul. I studied homeopathy from like 20, 21 years ago. It was a short course. Then I did a longer one in Germany and was just using it for my family, friends, for my kids. And I was a young mom as well. So my priority was my family, my kids, and anything that I can do alongside them. So I started a business, a fashion business, and it was doing really well. I was earning quite a lot, and I could work alongside family, kids, and everyone. But it never satisfied me. The more I would put in, the more I would get out as well. But when you mentioned COVID, that was my time. Do I really want to do this for my life? Because whenever I gave a remedy to someone and they felt better, it was like Wow, this is what gives me pleasure. And that was a time where I thought, okay, let's study homeopathy again. And I enrolled into the School of Homeopathy. And I have never looked back after. Loved a thing every single day of my homeopathic study. And I'm loving each and everything that I'm doing. And now I feel like, okay, I am doing something that is satisfying me, my soul. Doesn't matter if I die tomorrow, I'm helping someone, and this is what I'm here for. And I left my business, everything, and I'm just totally dedicated to my family and homeopathy.
It's gorgeous.
It's the way, isn't it? It's the way. It's a similar story. I was in IT, amazingly, but there was a destiny for that, because I think if I had not been in IT, I wouldn't understand electronics, which means I wouldn't have understood frequencies, harmonics, resonance as I do now. So it's quite interesting. There was no time wasted, but it was always that thing which we've heard so many times from so many homeopaths on this show. You don't feel satisfied with what you're doing. It's like, am I really helping somebody by selling a computer? Am I changing somebody's life? And like Nihilus so eloquently said, you know, when you give a remedy, when homeopaths give a remedy and the patient says, do you know what? This has happened and that's gone and this is something positive and I've moved on with my life. And it's like, there's no better white knuckle thrill than that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what, though? I believe that people come to homeopathy at the right time in their lives as well. That just as you did all of that, it means that you have this real breadth of experience, of skills that you bring to the homeopathy world. Mm-hmm. And I think we are so privileged as a profession to have people with this multitude of skills that they bring to it. And they can, you know, what they do is they learn the homeopathy and then they reflect on their past lives or they reflect on the things that they've learned through that homeopathy lens. And then it alters, it morphs, you know, it becomes something else. And that is why I think we have such a strong profession, because we are not just homeopaths who start off at 18 and have only ever known a homeopathy world. We are people who have lived experience. We are people who, you know, as you say, IT skills. What a boon to have IT skills. You know, we only have to look at the work of Marcus at the moment, Marco, with the, with the Somelier program. And so I've spoken to both of Radar and Somelier this week, but, you know, you've only got to look at what he has done, you know, and that's because he's had all of this experience. And then he's seen a thing in homeopathy or something to solve. And he's brought all of that skill plus his homeopathy into developing this program. And that's what people do.
Yeah, absolutely. You said something very interesting, and we are going to move into something quite fascinating, which is the Fibonacci sequence of remedies in a bit, ladies and gentlemen. But this is such an exciting conversation. Homeopaths, you mentioned everyone has their time, and you mentioned education, and we know that there is a system. We may go down a rabbit hole here, so we have to be very careful with the words, but the education system, who says it's as it's supposed to be, or it should be maybe different, blah, 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 right? But we've seen some of the best entrepreneurs on this planet who have just said, you know what? Enough is enough for me personally. I'm just going to do what idea I have in my mind. And they have become intellectually ripe, not necessarily having to, you know, been to university as well. But in homeopathy, there's an element of creativity, which is a huge element of creativity with homeopathy itself, isn't there? The artistry of it. And it's interesting, you can be literally 18, or you can be 50 or 60 or 40, whatever it is. And it just comes to you, doesn't it? And it's like that calling, and it's the right time. It's really deep. It's a beautiful way to say it.
Yes. And, you know, I think we all have our journeys in this lifetime. And, you know, for us, it's about being homeopaths. It's about contributing. And, you know, one of the best things that I see, you know, because I have supervised you know, along with about eight of us, these 15,000 cases, student cases in a year. Wow. So we have done the supervision as well. Yeah, I'm surprised we can even stand, but we have done that supervision. And, you know, what I'm seeing is, you know, I have 15,000 cases full of data to work with. But it's when people come back, and it's not just the patient that gets better, it's the ripple effect from that patient. Is that patient, you know, their energy, changing the energy of everybody around them. You know, the child that starts sleeping, the mum who starts getting her own sleep, the mum who then becomes more energetic, the mum then can, you know, can deal with all of her problems or her issues more, you know, that can integrate. So, you know, that's a really fascinating thing. And that's something I'd like to explore, you know, the family dynamics of our treatment. Because, you know, it's beautiful when you go and you say, you know, when you know, I think you were saying before, oh, well, when that person, things change for them. But it's not just them they change for.
It's for everyone around them. We see that in provings as well. When you have taken the remedy, it's just not you who is affected. It's the whole family and wider family and community. That is affected, and it's all energy. You will get what you are projecting outside. Like, for example, you mentioned that when you are training students, you are training them to become self-sufficient, that you are training them in an apprenticeship style so they can go straight away into the practice. Actually, the mindset of the student changes as well alongside, like, I am going to stand on my two feet. I can have the ground beneath my feet when I am going out of my college. That's what they need. And if they can get that experience during their study period, that is going to give them that that zeal, that push. It's going to come to me. The patients are going to come to me. I'll see the results, the confidence they need for practicing. That will come because I personally, as a homeopath, seeing homeopathy work and seeing the results is so important whilst you are studying. That's why the supervision is even more beneficial. Like, you are not only becoming a homeopath, you are also becoming a confident practitioner alongside as a prescriber. You'll see what is... what you can change when you're taking a case, like a teacher is sitting in, an experienced homeopath is sitting in and seeing what have you asked, how could you change that, what were the results, just go in with your flow. The case will open up. Don't have to go in with I remember my first case taking, I was asking my supervisor, do I prepare questions? What do I ask them? Because... when I was taking the cases of the friends and family, I knew pretty much what it was, what did they need. I knew how they were, and I just went with symptomatic. But a person who you don't know at all, how am I going to communicate? But when the world opens, it's just amazing.
That was, strangely enough, I was asked that by a student yesterday because she was... you know, we were talking and she noted that in the cases that they see that I take, they were saying, but, you know, when you take a case, you don't do a top to toe, you don't do this, you know, you don't ask lots and lots of breadth about their lives. And she said, but you find something that you're interested in and you track it. And, yes. You know, and she was saying, I wish I could be like that. And I said, but it will come. You know, you have to learn almost like your fallback system, first of all. That's your safety net. Mm. Yeah, that's what you do. But as you become more experienced, you get the, I call them almost like homeopath prickles on the back of your neck, you know. And it's that sensation that you think, this is important and I need to follow it.
Ah, goosebumps. There we go. Goosebumps, Naila.
Yeah, I have this. I write in when I'm taking a case. I write in my notes goosebumps in the bracket. There is where I felt the energy moving.
Yes.
This is where the center of the case is. I need to go in. We can forget about everything else. This is the symptom maker, how Bill Rumble, my beloved teacher, called it. Symptom maker is communicating with you.
That's such a lovely way of putting it, the goosebump moment.
Yeah, the goosebump moment that we get. Because we all have this. We feel like even in a conversation when we are having with someone outside, there are moments we connect and then we keep on talking about that very topic. What is it? It's the energy matching, and all we need to do is, where is the energy of the case? So beautifully said. Thank you.
It's not copyright. Goosebump moment, the word.
Yeah. I don't use that with the students.
It's a registered trademark, but it's not copyright.
But it is. And, you know, that's what we want. And one of the things I'm really interested about, you know, since the time that, you know, I haven't, you know, that little hiatus that I had, it's all the new methods out there. So my real focus at the moment, because I'm probably, you know, classically trained, you know, but my students are all experiencing the world differently to the world of 30 years ago. Mm. And their patients are experiencing the world differently. You know, the most of our patients that they, you know, that the students see are probably, the biggest group will be women, followed by, you know, younger sort of child, you know, mums, followed by elderly, then followed by young people, very few teenagers, and actually no children that we had under one. So, you know, we have this profile. And those very women are the ones who are experiencing life in a very chaotic, fat, guilt-ridden often way. And, you know, so does the, you know, obviously sepia is one of our big ones for it, carcinosin, sepia, things like that. But, you know, one of the things I want our students to do is not make them do it the way I did it.
Mm.
Okay? We have a new world, and I'm interested in the integration of new knowledge into practice.
Mm.
You know, then we have, you know, of course, there's always Tina Smits and Cease, but now we have Tom Jansen doing his detox, you know, Ren Lloyd doing her detoxes. Mm-hmm. We have Sarah Valentini talking about complex children, Rita Pozsen in Norway. So we have this huge influx, you know. Colin Griffiths has always been around, obviously, with the meditative provings.
Yeah.
He's an amazing man, and he's going to come and do a couple of sessions for us. But, you know, it's how do people integrate so that we don't lose the good of what we've done in the past, but we also, you know, how do people make a decision on what strategy to use?
Mm.
Because, you know, Atik, I know you do the Narayanis, and I might join your course, but you do the Narayanis, and, you know, as part of that, and German New Medicine and things like that, but as part of that, you know, when do you go and choose a Narayani remedies? You know, Carolyn Gaskin came and taught our students them, and I've used them for years. But, you know, when do we choose that? When do we use a SAR code approach? When do we use, you know, a protocol? You know, when do we use a bandage, for instance? When do we do this? And it's allowing, that's a really interesting thing. I want to find out from practitioners how they make those decisions. You know, they've got this toolbox. What do they do with it?
Yeah.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I think that's what that's how homeopathy in practice started as well. Like Atik always says, you need to have a bigger toolbox when you don't know. Like sometimes there are cases where if you don't know where to go, what to do, then you can start something. When the things start moving, you can go in with your classical remedy, because you cannot. The complete healing, the complete health that is going to come from the vital force needs a different way of going into the case. But you also need to see some results to make the if they are not a convert, you need to convert them. You need to see where what they need. And that's what we are also trying to do with homeopathy in practice, sharing the deep knowledge that our homeopaths have brought to homeopathy with the students, so they can make their own picture of homeopathy, and they can connect with the sources. Like as we were talking earlier as well, everyone brings in their own essence into homeopathy. We are not like in Asia where you start to become a homeopath at a younger age, like medical homeopaths. You're so good at materia medica and therapeutics, and you know your remedies on your fingertips, like with their keynotes. We try to understand humans. We try to understand the core patterns, and sometimes it needs time for them even to share the core patterns. So beautifully said. Thank you.
One of the hardest things as a supervisor is to sit on your hands sometimes and not interfere, because it's their prescription, it's what they want to do, and as long as you're holding safety and ask them to, you know, and work through why they're doing things, then it's very much that they should be allowed to practice in the way that they want. And that can be quite difficult.
Yeah, can be. Like, especially when you, because I loved the word that you used for your PhD study as well, the straddling paradigms and then midwifery. So I think we can bring that into that context to explain it to our listeners. What do you mean by straddling paradigms? And
in my PhD, in all of my life, everything that I have done has been in the liminal space between two different factions or two different approaches. So when we go into a school of medicine, a school of nursing, they have a very conventional paradigm, and I was an alternate paradigm, you know. And so I learned very much to navigate the spaces in between those. And then when we went to, you know, my PhD, it was about how midwives who'd become homeopaths experienced being in that system. And very few of them were successful, unfortunately. And I think most people left because, you know, they were not allowed to do what they needed to do, again, to feed that soul. And they were practicing alien to their nature and their values. So the majority of them left. But even now, with those ideas about different ways of practicing, again, it's that liminal space, or that space between, you know, a classical homeopath or this approach, and how people operate in that space, and what decisions they make and what feelings they have during that space.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because if we just take that up a notch slightly, it's everyone to themselves. The beauty of homeopathy is that we're all artists and we have the same tools, etc. The paintbrushes, let's say, and something I've said many, many times, but it's so beautiful because every homeopath finds their way. They do. Yes, there is a plethora of different sub-modalities under the umbrella, right, of homeopathy, but whoever finds whatever they're comfortable, and it doesn't happen in the first year, 2 years, sometimes it can take much, much longer, but they're comfortable with it and it works, right? Homeopathy works for each and every practitioner. No practitioner says, oh my God, I'm a homeopath of 10 years and it's never worked. It's not. It's like, I do this, I do that. You know, different modalities we've mentioned. We've spoken about some of the eminent teachers like Colin and Elise Timmerman and Matrodona remedies to cosmic homeopathy to Narayani remedies to classical, of course, which is the foundations for any homeopath. We have to say that actually very, very important. But there are all these things that we can add to it to enhance how we practice. It's beautiful, isn't it? So versatile.
Yes, but by knowing what happens in those spaces allows us to provide role models for people coming into the profession who might say, ah, I didn't think of doing that, or what if I can try that? Or, you know, it's about enhancing other people's practice by learning from what other people do. Because otherwise we would still be doing it, you know, at the turn of the century, we'll all still be practicing Kentian homeopathy. You know, do you believe that our patients have changed, not necessarily changed in themselves, but in what they're able to express, the things that concern them, the remedies that we need in the last 20 years?
I personally believe that, because when the environment changes, the personality changes, we sometimes don't know ourselves what the core is. Like people coming to us, just when you mentioned just in the beginning, the universities are producing workforce. So if you have gone to a system of schooling, and if you've gone to a university and you have done a degree from a highly esteemed university, and every work in factory out there, every employer out there knows people from this university are going to be the brilliant workforce. So they'll go around, give them all the beautiful packages, etc. So now I am the person who is very, very valuable to work in this industry. But am I the same person who was born to be working in this environment?
They're privileging you as a worker rather than you as a person.
Yeah. And then and if you keep on doing that for, like, let's say 10, 15 years, you'll become that person. And you might, this is what they say. Some patients come and say, I feel that I don't belong in my body. I feel I am outside my body. I can't go in my body. If you are born as a sensitive individual and you have to fit in that box where you have to cut a lot of your branches.
Yeah, you have to conform, isn't it?
You have to conform, and then you are not you anymore. And that's where your soul, your vital force is expressing it with all that power of symptoms.
Yeah, please do stay on online, and we'll talk to you afterwards. But for now, from this episode of the Homeopathy Health Show, from Nyla and myself,
and from all our listeners,
stay safe, and we will talk to you very soon. I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Tune in every week for inspiring conversations, bringing you all things health and well-being to your radio and podcast apps.
The more exposure the Homeopathy Health Show receives, the better for homeopathy around the world.
And please do support the show by clicking follow on our socials.
You can find us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk and on Facebook and Instagram at Homeopathy in Practice. Do give us a follow on there. Let's promote the voice of homeopathy around the world together. Until next time, stay safe and take care.